Good afternoon, Chicago. You are listening to Out Front with AJ Signeri. I am your host, AJ. I hope you are enjoying today, because if you live in the Chicago area, we had a very unique weather situation. In the morning, it was kind of nice, you know, a little chilly, the right temperature I felt and everything, and then by the afternoon, it got dark and gloomy, and then the wind started picking up, then the rain came down, and I live in the south side of Chicago, and so the next thing I'm knowing, I'm hearing tornado sirens, and I was turned on, you know, went to the website, the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Association, NOAA website, which have a radar, and so there's like this storm coming through that's coming from the southwest. And I know that's when I started noticing that it hit through towns like central Illinois all the way up to Chicago. And then after the storm passed, a few of my friends were posting pictures of the storm that just went through and everything, and a tornado actually hit through a town near my home, kind of near my hometown, about maybe an hour and a half north of where the tornado hit. A town called Washington, Illinois. It's right there by Peoria, Illinois. It was a devastating tornado. I believe they were calling it an F4, maybe an F5 tornado, for those of you who understand, you know, tornado lingo. F5 is like the most violent storms. I think they get up to like 200 miles an hour. So it was between F4 and F5. Devastated homes and everything. So any of my friends in the Peoria area, I hope you're doing okay. I've sent some emails. I've been texting people, calling people to make sure it's everything okay. So I hope all my friends in Peoria, as well as other parts of central Illinois, hopefully you're safe. Hopefully your home hasn't been torn down by the tornado, and hopefully, you know, the activists and community organizing community are banding together in order to get relief aid to homes, helping people find shelter and provide food, water, and clothing for those who need it. So please check your Facebook to see what's going on down there, because I know the Washington, Illinois area really needs relief aid at this moment. So I hope everyone's getting what they're getting. Today's a day that we are airing live on the AM side of the radio, on the AM 1710 side. So if you are hearing us on the AM radio land, hello. I'm AJ, as I said. This is AM 1710 Q4 radio. We do not do any corporate advertising. We do regular activism organizing updates. We play local music. We also play other music by musician friends and artist friends that we know. When we also promote artists, and with that, you know, if you are a artist out there and you are an independent artist, student artist, a musician, a poet, stand-up, an actor, or an author, we have an unprecedented and revolutionary opportunity for you to advertise your art talent, a show, or an event for just $10 for a 30-second ad. Now, this is not an introductory offer. Our station manager, W.C. Turk, you can call him at 773-341-8919 for details about that. And with that, we are going to promote that for you, because we only now help activists and organizers, but we also help the artists at this time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk. I'm sorry, a lot of things are just going on at this moment right now. We're working out some kinks and everything. If you're listening to us on the AM side and you are hearing Out Front for the first time, let me give you a little bit of a background of what this show's about and why you should be listening to not only Out Front, but the other shows that we have here at AM 1710 Q4 Radio. This show is primarily is about activism, politics, and the arts. We will have activists come in here to talk about their activism and the state of activism, not only in the city of Chicago, but state of Illinois and nationally. We will also talk about politics on many levels, and we will also talk to artists, why to do the mediums that they do, where you can find them, what galleries to go to, and have deep conversation. And this is what the show is about, is conversation. Unlike other radio shows that you hear on WCPT, WBEZ, WGN, WLS, WVON, they're all about interviews, and which is fine. That's all well and good, but here and out front, we do a lot of conversation. You know, there may be a question here and there, but, you know, it's really deep conversation, trying to get to the root of what's really going on, because this is what journalism is about, is trying to get to the systemic problems that we have in our society in order to strive towards a better quality of life in our society. So that's why on this show we talk about politics, activism, and the arts, because all three of those components will help us strive towards that. My influences have always been John Williams, who was a radio personality on the WGN radio. I always liked him. I liked the way he formatted his shows and the people he had on there, and was kind of neutral when it comes to his own politics. So I've always been influenced by that. And there's other a lot of people I've been influenced by. Cliff Kelly down at WVON. When Bill Maher had his Politically Incorrect show, I was really drawn to that on the kind of questioning he was providing, and I was also trying to provide an intellectual environment to talk about issues when it comes to politics. And there's a number of people in journalism as well as, I guess you can call it entertainment. I think Bill's show is a little bit more entertainment now than what it was before. But those things have always influenced me on how to have a conversation with people, providing civic discourse. And that's what this show is really about, trying to have civil discourse. I am an activist. I am a community organizer. I've worked in politics. I also am an artist. So I can relate to the many things that are going on, what's going on here in Chicago, state of Illinois, in the Midwest, and everything. It's because of this network that I've built over the years, having conversations with many people. We had Larry Redmond with the campaign to end the new Jim Crow. We had Reverend Billy Talon, who is facing a year in prison and a $30,000 bail. We've also had, oh man, a plethora of people so far. I mean, we're on our third week of this show right now. And today, later on today on the show, we're going to be having Morgan Fox, the Director of Communications with the Marijuana Policy Project. Tomorrow we're going to have Jay Becker, who's a Chicago activist. We're going to be talking with Jay about the state of activism in Chicago, how that plays out in Illinois. And this Wednesday, Dr. David Schwickart, professor of philosophy at Loyola University of Chicago. He's the author of After Capitalism. So we're going to talk about his book, what that book is about, and hopefully get into some deep philosophical conversation with that. Thursday, we're going to be having Sarah Beth Woods, an artist in the Chicagoland area, and she's actually going to be attending a conference at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign that's kind of taps into some of the art that I'm interested in, and the conference she's attending is called Punk Feminism. So we're going to be talking a little bit about what that means and how that's incorporated into her art and everything. And then Friday will be the, I guess you can call it an anniversary. I hate to call it an anniversary, but the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. We're going to be talking about that. Hopefully I'm going to have a guest on Friday about that, what the assassination, since assassination, what has that meant to the American people, and what has happened since Kennedy's assassination, and if Kennedy was alive today, what kind of legislation that he would have pushed forward during his administration if he would have survived that tragedy. as I said, this is a different show. This is out front, and by that, you know, we take the streets, we talk about things, we're actually involved in everything, and all what have you. And we are different. We are vastly different from other shows, whether it be Terry Gross on NPR or Stephanie Miller, who's on WCPT, or, you know, Reverend Sharpton down when he has a show broadcasted at WVON. We are vastly different because we actually talk about the issues. And I want to provide that example of how we are different. If you listen to CPT, BEZ, VON, or any of those stations, they really are apologetic to Democratic Party. WLS will be apologetic to the Republican Party. And we're not apologetic to anyone. We are unbiased. We are unfiltered. We will talk to people, whether they're Democrat, Republican, Green, Libertarian, Socialist, Communist, Anarchist. We will talk to anyone. We'll have a conversation about it just to understand that perspective. I am not a singular ideological person. I have multitude of ideologies that I believe in, certain ideals. There are many ideals I believe in. Yeah, I do vote for particular political parties. I do have my own political philosophy as well. But I'm always open to conversation. I'm always open to conversation. And my friends will even tell you that. I have friends who are conservative, some that would claim that they're part of the Tea Party. I know some who voted Republican. I have friends who voted Democrat. I have Green Party friends, Libertarian friends, Socialist friends, Anarchist friends. So I am just open to listen to what the conversation is about. And one of those conversations is something I posted on Facebook. For those of you who do not know, Seattle voted in their first socialist candidate in the Seattle City Council in 100 years. Kashama Shamat won. This is her second time around to run for city council. The last time she ran, I believe she got 46% of the vote. This time, she was the outright winner for this one. And the Blaze put it on their own page that, you know, it's official. The socialist is now on the city council. And this was an interview that they conducted with Kashama. And essentially, it kind of outlines, you know, their take, why she won, why is what she's going to be putting forth as far as city legislation is concerned. But she's also talked about some other things. There's a paragraph in here where she says a rally. She's also an occupier, and she's very against the Stand Your Ground law, and has said that the capitalist system is the root of racism in America. So when I posted this, you know, I just wanted people to see, you know, this is what this news outlet has provided. Now, I thought people were going to respond that, oh, she's a socialist. What is this going to mean for the Seattle? Or, oh, this is, you know, it's Seattle. They're a little bit progressive. So, no, duh, socialist is going to win there. I thought that line of conversation is going to go about nay, nay. One of my friends, the one thing that they pointed out was the mere fact that capitalism is not the root of racism in America. This person's called her a deluded individual. And I was kind of thrown by that a little bit. This is a gentleman who is very intelligent, very intelligent. And I was just kind of thrown by his whole critique of that one thing and how, you know, capitalism is not the root of everything. And I was just kind of thrown back because, you know, I didn't want to get into an online debate about this because it was pretty much a lose-lose situation at that point. And I do feel that there are strong ties between capitalism and racism. I do feel that. There is a systemic problem that we have when it comes to capitalism and racism. There is a relationship there. Capitalism in itself is a young, what's the word I'm looking for? Philosophy. Capitalism is a much younger philosophy. You go to Adam Smith, David Ricardo, and they will tell you how capitalism helps society, and then this is what capitalism is about. However, there's a lot of critique that capitalism does not help any society. If anything, capitalism has done more damage than anything else. So you're probably thinking, well, AJ, if capitalism is so young and racism is old, how can capitalism be the root of all racism if it's a young philosophical idea? You have to understand, you have to go back a little bit more, because pre-capitalism, we had feudalism. Feudalism is an old capitalistic idea where you had monarchies that had serfs in the various lands. That was a slave wage economy as well. We've read the stories, and especially if you're into medieval history, this is what feudalism was about. It was an economic system. It was a totally top-down fascist system, you know, where people actually went into areas. And this is what has happened. Capitalism is just one of those things that's really old. The idea may be new, but it goes back further than what people forget about. So because of that, racism and capitalism do have strong ties very early on. I would go as far to say also that if you think racism and capitalism is not are exclusive, and capitalism is not the root of evil, if you will, when it comes to racism, then how can you say that without talking about the school to prison pipeline? How can you say that when we have for-profit prisons, and you have states like Louisiana that has the highest inmate rate in the country, that has happened to be housing blacks and Hispanics? How can you say that capitalism racism has no ties when you have the military going into high schools and pretty much recruiting those kids into a capitalistic system? Now, how is that a little bit racist? Because they only choose certain people in a certain demographic. And then what's left over? I have seen a lot of this happening, and I'll get to that in a little bit. I'm going to take a quick station break, and we'll get right into this. This is Out Front with AJ on AM 1710 Q4 Radio. Maybe.
Actors and authors with unprecedented and revolutionary.
And we are back here on Out Front with AJ here on AM 1710 Q4 Radio. If you kind of heard some things not going quite so right, that'd be my fault. Just working out some kinks here on the software that we have here, here in the studio. But I think I got it covered now. So hopefully, Bill or Raul's not yelling at me through the walls just yet. Before we took the break, was talking about a Facebook post I put up the other day, and it was about a friend of mine who commented on this post about the socialist candidate that won their race for the Seattle City Council race, where she won. First socialist candidate to win a city council seat in 100 years. And what I was kind of more critiquing was about my friend who was critiquing the post on how, you know, she mentioned in the article in The Blaze that capitalism is not the root of racism. And I beg to differ with that. I very much beg to differ with that. Previously, I just mentioned that capitalism is a younger philosophical idea, but it goes back further than that. We're going back to the days of feudalism, which then transitioned into capitalism. You know, so it goes back further than what it was, what it is right now. And we have systemic problems today because of capitalism. Capitalism is about the idea of profiting, the idea of generating wealth, which if you read Adam Smith's book, Wealth of Nations, he kind of talks about that a little bit. And David Ricardo talks about that in his own analysis on why, about capitalism as well. And I just mentioned before the break is that, you know, we have the school-to-prison pipeline. We have the military. We even have schools that have a dual-track system where only specific students go to one track over another track, and then they have to go a whole different other route. You have one track, this is pretty much college prep track, that kind of tailors to those kids to grow them intellectually so they can go to good schools, and then those kids who are not the college prep track goes to more regular classes, if not vocational track, and then they have to end up in worker class jobs. And then now they're in the system of trying to work so much that they have to work for the needs that they have to go to. And because they can't meet those needs, sometimes they have to go on unemployment. Sometimes they have to do food stamps. Sometimes they have to go on these other things. So this idea of people being lazy is a farce, is a complete farce. There are people who are working two jobs, three jobs, sometimes four, just to meet the needs for themselves and their family. Now, there's a whole set of other issues with that, too. There's a whole set of other issues, you know? And that's what makes this idea that capitalism is a root of racism so complex, is because there are other issues within this argument that capitalism is the root of racism. So you have to differentiate between the actual claim and the other issues that are within that claim as well. Because if you don't, then, you know, you're just going to be jaded in your own argument and everything. And that's how I feel about it. I have seen this. I have talked to people. I've done my research on this. So I feel I'm a little bit knowledgeable on this topic. And I hope other people will do their own research on this as well, because that is something that's very lost, that we don't research our own information. You can't solely rely on Facebook. You can't solely rely on Wikipedia. You can't solely rely on other things. You have to go to a library. You have to go talk to scholars. You have to talk to people who are on the ground with who are in activism and community organizing. You have to have dialogue. You can read as many books there is on this planet, but the bottom line is you have to have a conversation with people. My friend was right in one of his comments is that, you know, he may disagree with me, but he will fight on something that he believes in. And he is right. You know, you can fight on your stance. And he may not agree with me on it, but I know he would be willing to sit down, listen, and have a conversation. But at the same token, I know it's going to be a lose-lose situation because, you know, as I'm trying to persuade him that, you know, his argument is incorrect, it's still good to have dialogue just to understand that perspective. And that's what I've done before I got on this radio station. I have my own internet radio show on Blog Talk Radio, and I've also worked out a little bit more underground radio stations as well. So this is my first alternative news as we're doing right now. And prior to this, you know, I had to learn the other side of the argument with the conservatives. So I had to listen to, I personally listened to Limbaugh, Beck, Hannity. I listened to them and Dr. Laura Schlesinger, and because I really wanted to, Mark Levin, I can't forget Mark Levin, because I want to know what that argument is about, what that perception that they have. As kooky as it may sound, it kind of drove me mad just listening to them. Because the whole time I'm hearing these guys, I'm like, you have no real backup information whatsoever. You know, and then all they do is talk at you and not have a dialogue with you. And that's what makes AM 1710 Q4 Radio different, because whether it be Rush Limbaugh or Stephanie Miller, they will talk at you. They will not talk with you. We are going to be the ones talking with you to better understand something. I know my own political philosophy is much different than our station manager, Bill Turk, as well as it goes to our tech person, Jason, as well as our other radio host, Winter Lake. But we all have the same like mind, and we will have a conversation and better understand who we are in order to make this radio station a stronger radio station here in the city of Chicago. Because even though we're technically a community radio station on the AM side, you can listen to us on www.queno4.org, where people in Auckland, New Zealand, to Auckland. Did I say Auckland, New Zealand? Auckland, California to Auckland, New Zealand. Well, can hear us. And if there is an Auckland, New Zealand, please call in to correct me, because I think there could be an Auckland, New Zealand. And Auckland is just one of those Aussie terms that they're just throwing out there. So yeah, we are international, you know, so everyone's hearing us worldwide on this and everything. So if you are listening to us, I just want to experiment this. You know, you can call in at 773-217-8343 to have a conversation with me if you feel that capitalism is the root of racism. Or if you don't, call in and say that too, you know, and we can have a conversation about it. I'm not afraid. Just don't cuss on the air, and if you do, I will hang up on you. I have no qualms of pushing that button. And if you are just yelling at me, I will hang up on you as well. I have no qualms with that either. So, I mean, I want civil discourse. This is the airwave for us here. This is the public sphere. This is the public square. This is, if you want to talk, you can talk. You can't do that on CPT. You can't do that on WBEZ, WGN, WLS, or WVON. You can only do it here on AM 1710, Q4 Radio. And I know I am saying that a lot because, gosh dang it, you need to know this, you know, because we are occupying the airwaves. We have built the Field of Dreams for you people. You need to come and play with us because, you know, it's kind of lonely here. me just talking. You know, I like to have conversation and everything. And as we're as I'm talking, we're trying to decorate the studio in here as well. So that too, this doesn't need to be clean and everything. If you want to talk, because I have who do I have in the studio? I have Bill Turk, our station manager, actually. See if this comes out. Bill, how are you doing?
Doing well. I wanted to back you up what you were talking about. Which about part? Capitalism and racism.
Oh yeah.
You know what? I used to adhere to the notion that everything was market based.
Yeah.
That was, you know, if African Americans are 12% of the population of the country, then it's only reasonable to expect that that only 12% of advertising and marketing would be budgets would be spent on African Americans. However, the flip side of that coin is, and the immoral side of that coin is that you end up then segmenting populations and closing off populations based solely on. Based solely on race or economics, and rather than trying to incorporate minorities into the larger community and the larger culture more strongly and more respectfully, you end up creating these little pockets in which you draw stronger and stronger lines around those communities.
So. As I was saying, I kind of posted on my personal Facebook page mm-hmm. that Kashama Shamat, who won the Seattle City Council race,
mm-hmm.
first socialist in 100 years in Seattle to mm-hmm. serve in the seat now.
Yeah.
And in that, the Blaze article, theblaze.com, she says that, you know, capitalism is the root of racism mm-hmm. and everything. So my one friend who's in the military.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that that was in the Blaze is because that's Glenn Beck's page, and he's looking to find some way. Yes, it is.
That part I did not know.
The Blaze is Glenn Beck.
And I was kind of wondering why he had a little bit of a right tinge
to it. He's brought that up, and I haven't heard his show in a little bit, but no doubt there's an effort to diminish or discredit her because to them, and they've said it, I've heard him say it 1,000 times, everything is about, you know, everything is about capitalism and marketing and capitalism is unassailable, and the reason that we're in the trouble that we have now is because we're so socialist oriented because of Obama, you know, that, and we need to get back to our Ayn Randian capitalist,
mm-hmm.
You know, hunt or be hunted, eat or be eaten, sort of mentality. So that's what Glenn Beck promotes, but that's the Blaze.
So what's your take on this logic? My friend vehemently disagrees
mm-hmm.
that capitalism is not the root of racism. Cause he could
capitalism, I don't think capitalism is necessarily the root of racism, but it supports it.
But he contends that socialism is the root of laziness.
The root word of socialism is social. And some of the more active and intensely engaged people I know consider themselves socialists.
So,
and socialism, really, you know, I would counter with this that extreme capitalism, which is what we're at now or very very close, creates the quote unquote laziness. Of certain segments of the population, if you subscribe to that sort of cartoonish sort of way of looking at things, but I would counter that it's the exhaustion that people feel. It's also the sense, and the recent polls bear this out, that a majority of Americans, and this is at an all-time high, it's like at 72% or something, don't believe in the American dream and don't believe that unless you're born into wealth or incredibly lucky that you have a chance of breaking out of your wherever you're born to on the socioeconomic ladder. So from that standpoint, I'd have to say that capitalism, extreme capitalism, is so discouraging to most people, so exhausting to most people, that when they do find a safe haven, someplace that will give them a break, they take it. On the other hand, if you have a society in which there's greater opportunity at equity, then I think people will take ideas of socialism, like healthcare, like housing, like different, you know, things like that are there to support and back up and protect people, that they'll take that as a platform and move forward with what they really dream about and want to accomplish.
I don't know. I know you've been busy and you're doing stuff today with the studio and everything, mm-hmm. So I don't know if you heard this part. Capitalism is a new philosophical idea. It really is. But it's actually older than was perceived.
Well, I would go a step further and say that there's a biological imperative to at least some aspect of capitalism. If you look at here's a great example, spiders. When they build a spider web, what they're doing is they're building and creating. They're identifying a market and then they're building their web to serve that market. That market is the spider's hunger, mm-hmm. But. They put that web in a place where it will maximize its efficiency in catching bugs so that the spider can eat. That's a type of marketing. So I think certain aspects of this are ingrained in us biologically through a spectrum of species. But I also think that we are social and moral creatures as well, and capitalism, like anything else in the human condition, needs to be tempered with that morality and that social. Go ahead.
But using that same
analogy,
mm-hmm. the spider web is capitalism. You have insects mm-hmm. who are doing their own work
mm-hmm.
to survive,
mm-hmm.
and then they get caught up in the web of capitalism, and therefore the spider now eats that very working insect that was just going through its mundane ordeal, and now it's just got eaten up by capitalism. So
true to an extent. You know, there's on the surface there seems a purity in that capitalist sort of biological imperative, but there spiders and other creatures won't gorge themselves, and they don't kill unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. So it's not simply to devour until I've devoured everything in my path. Sort of it's a devouring by need. So the socialist aspect of that comes into in that natural setting, aside from human beings, at least in my opinion, comes from the fact that it's the animal's imperative to sustain itself. But it's also in the animal's imperative not to completely destroy its own environment, at least not on the whole. I mean, you make cases with locusts and what
right.
have you,
right.
But that is not the rule in the animal kingdom. The animal kingdom generally is to sustain itself, but also there's a limit within what it will consume. Because there is, at some instinctual level, an idea that if it eats everything in the forest, it will die the following season.
And I completely agree with that.
Thank you, have a great day. It's a
this
cut my losses.
So what I said also is that the problem with this, there are other issues within that context of racism is the root of capitalism is
there
root of, because so you have certain demographics that do use the system. They abuse the system.
Sure,
there are people who do that. You know, and I'm not.
And in this country, primarily it's white people.
Well, I'm going to the other side that there. I know some certain people in the African American community that have abused the system. For example, I know a girl.
Yeah.
Of a girl
mm-hmm.
who purposely impregnated herself,
mm-hmm.
has 10 kids
mm-hmm.
because she says, if I have X amount of kids,
mm-hmm.
the state will pay X amount of dollars, okay. therefore I'm using the system.
Mm-hmm.
That is like, why? I mean, I don't understand that logic. So it's people like that I'm saying. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not saying every black is doing that. I'm talking about she happens to be
yep.
African-American,
yep.
and she has said, I am being pregnant because of the state aid and everything. So it's issues like that that's kind of intertwined in this argument of, you know, capitalism is the root of racism.
Two things. You could also make a case somewhere along the line that somewhere is a thought or an imperative or a sense that the more children I have, at some point with the limited opportunities I have in the black community, with the limited opportunities that have been given, the impedance that's placed on minority communities in this country, that her best chance for long-term survival, you know, putting food on the table, having someone to take care of her, might also involve having all those children. So there's a secondary benefit. The other thing I would say is that, again, back to that idea that we've so degraded the opportunities for African Americans and other minorities, but particularly African Americans in this country, and we still will tell them to their face they have no right to feel offended, right, over certain words or certain things, that we our police follow them and harass them far more than any other racial constituency in the country. That with that lack of opportunity, again, we're looking at a symptom of the disease, not the disease itself. Mm-hmm. And the disease itself it falls back in our laps. The symptom of the disease is this woman finding some sort of safe haven or some sort of opportunity, and this being an opportunity that's available to her, and with the limited opportunities that are so often placed upon the African American community, you're going to have people that choose or mix some of those opportunities in order to survive, and they're looking for the angles at some point. When you get close to that margin, you're looking at the angles.
So, would you be of the opinion that we should end capitalism and maybe not transition to socialism, but just end it and then just build a whole new economic system?
No, just because, you know, I wouldn't want to get rid of capitalism completely, just like I wouldn't want to see communism or socialism or fascism or, you know, a monarchy,
yeah,
you know, be the only system. There needs to be a system that is accommodating and supportive of human beings and, right, and the broadest spectrum of the human condition.
And we have that kind of here in the United States. You know, you have Social Security.
It's slipping away from us, though.
It is, but
very quickly.
Veterans benefits, mm-hmm, is socialistic. Chicago has its own socialistic garbage pickup.
I would also offer that the veterans, the aid that's given to veterans is less socialistic and less a pandering to an inroad by the powers that be in this country, mm-hmm, the political and economic powers that need to be able to rely on a simple populist message, that the surest way to do that is to fast track it through to those working class communities on the backs of veterans.
Okay.
Well, thank you. But I don't have an opinion on any of this. So. Thanks, AJ.
Well, I thank you for stopping in.
Anytime, buddy. And, I love the show.
And I like your show, Revolutionary.
I like your show more.
Okay, that's fine. when's your show air?
Well, we're Revolution and Beer weekdays from 9 to 11, and then we're Revolution and Beer weekends with my partner Brian Murray, mm-hmm, drinking beer at 1 to 3 on Saturdays.
And very quickly, yeah, I mentioned on the top of the hour,
yeah,
people need to talk to you about this revolutionary
offer. This whole arts thing? Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was just – there's a performance art space just down the street from here.
Okay.
Defibrillator.
Yeah.
And so I was talking, they're having a show and an event on Saturday night with some avant-garde dancers. Four beautiful women who I didn't want to leave. I just can I tell you more about this great arts opportunity No, I don't think I've told you enough. Gather around closely. You're all gorgeous. But what it is we want to support the arts here in Chicago.
Yes, we do.
So if you're an independent artist, independent gallery or space, and you want to get your message out, the poster on the cafe window is not, and the record store window is not going to do it for you.
Right.
Come here, let people hear that art, let people hear your message. $10 for a 30-second ad. The more ads you buy, we prorate that because we want to be a partner in your success. We don't want to be draining your ability to create great art. We want to support it. And people can reach me at 773-341-8919 for that. And we'll get their ad up on the air, 30 seconds, $10, or whatever you need. And we'll help the world know more about what you do.
And again, you know, I'm pounding this for a reason.
Go, pal.
You won't CPT all the other stations here in Chicago.
They won't. They can't.
They won't talk about the arts unless it's somewhere down at the Art Institute or Museum of Contemporary Art or anywhere else.
Or it's venues. A friend of a friend. I know there's another station that has a little arts segment, but it's usually a friend of a friend of the studio or a friend of somebody in the studio. We want to cover the maximum number of artists because there's a lot happening arts in this in this town.
You know, and even though we are against mainstream media for an obvious reason, I'm just speaking for myself. I'm feeling, you know, against the mainstream art scene because Chopin Theater, just around the block here, is a great space.
Beautiful
space. Defibrillator, it's a great space. The art gallery right next to us is a great space.
That's right.
Down the street here on Milwaukee Avenue, the Institute for Outsider Art, the only one in the United States that promotes outsider art.
Yes.
No one talks about that.
Yeah.
We
will.
We will have artists in here, musicians, the authors, the poets. I'm hoping to get the slam poppy, Mark Smith, who's the founder of slam poetry, up at the Green Mill up here in Chicago.
Oh, very nice.
Just to come in here. No one's going to do that.
No one is going to do that.
So take this offer.
Yes.
I mean, it's cheap.
Well, when, you know, I think when we hit the air and people start to hear about us, you're going to be hearing a lot of that. I think we're going to fill up the time very quickly, so people need to get in on that now. And the other thing is, like I said, this is unprecedented, but people also need to support this station so that we can support all this good work.
I'm going to take a station break, music break. We're going to have Morgan Fox, the communications director for the Marijuana Policy Project. Bill, thank you for coming in here and do what you're doing, my good friend.
Yep.
Again, this is AM 1710, Q4 Radio. This is Out Front with AJ, and I'm praying this works.
only direction. This car is my train. I'm driving and I'm wondering what it is I'm running from again. And I feel like an 80-year-old man, but I'm holding on to 29. And up ahead on that horizon is the California line. Now I've had enough of this freedom of the road. Never was good with decisions. At least that's what I've been told. Up ahead of trucks carrying a wide load, a prefab house cut in half, a cute little front door and two windows low. I'm not sure whether to cry or should I laugh. You see, I broke the home of myself once. When I stumbled to that door, read that note by the dawn's light. Said, don't you come round here anymore. I've had enough of this freedom of the road. Never was good with decisions. Oh, that's what I've been told. I've been holding on to this ticket, Lord, 'cause one day I'll pay this toll. And Magic Road grants your freedom to someone else, for I'll be coming home. Yeah, I know you. There'll be no more pay-per-view movies, easy economy motels, no more trash in my back seat from Mickey D's or Taco Bell, no more playing my trump cards for the ladies in the lounge. I think I'll leave a little something for the next train. There's got to be someone out there who thinks I still have my home. I got his picture right here in my back pocket, y'all. Along with some rocks I found in Arizona, I want to show him. And I know I returned to that awkward silence. There's so much work I've never known. But I know this man must make amends, 'cause I know my traveling days are done, and I know it all too well. 'Cause I've had enough, y'all, of this freedom on the road. Lord, won't you help me with my decision before I grow old? Oh, and I'm feeling every day. Because today I pay this toll. Magic Road grants your freedom. Your sweet freedom. Girl, I'm coming home.
And we are back here out front with AJ. I'm your host, AJ. And if you're listening to us, you listen to us on AM 1710 Q4 Radio. You can listen to us in the three following ways. You can, if you are hearing us, you're hearing us on the AM side of your radio dial, AM 1710. You're also probably hearing us on www.QUE4.org. Or you're listening to us because you download the Winamp app and you search for Q4 Radio, and you can download the Winamp app and listen to us that way on your smartphone or your iPhone while you're commuting in your respective town, or you are, you know, if you're in a lecture hall or you're in a meeting and you just want to listen to something while, you know, some mundane thing you're doing. You're probably listening to us as well, and if you're doing that, keep up the good work with that. Hopefully we're going to be talking with Morgan Fox, the Director of Communications with the Marijuana Policy Project in Washington, D.C. Hopefully we're going to talk with him about, you know, what is the MPP and then his take on marijuana legislation, as well as other fun things about marijuana, difference between marijuana and cannabis, and a slew of other topics about marijuana. For those of you who did not know, Illinois became a legalized state for medical marijuana, and that was pushed through Illinois Normal, which is housed here with the recording studio, the radio station is housed in here at the Multiculti Space here at 1000 North Milwaukee Avenue. So Dan Lynn and Phil Peterson and others organizers within Illinois Normal were the ones who had their feet to the ground in Springfield and Chicago and elsewhere in Illinois to talk about why medical marijuana is something that we need to strive towards, especially when it comes to revenue purposes and helping people when it comes to providing better health care for our citizens in the United States, as well as the residents of Illinois. So hopefully we're going to be talking to Morgan Fox about that. Earlier you probably heard us talk about a Facebook post I posted, you know, the root of racism
is the capitalist system that we have. And, you know, a friend said something that he doesn't agree with that. We just heard our station manager, Bill Turk, to hear his perspective on that, which I thought was a very interesting perspective. And, you know, I'm still unsettled of this whole issue and everything because, like I said, I've done my own research. I've seen my observations on this, and I do think there is a systemic problem with racism, and capitalism is one of those roots that leads towards racism and everything. But, you know, there are other factors that lead into racism as well. And if you want to hear all that, you know, you can go to our Q4 Radio page and listen to the archives on a show I did with Larry Redmond, the very first show of Out Front with Larry Redmond, where we talked about one of those issues. And we kind of dwelled into that issue with other guests I had here on Out Front. Reverend Billy Talon out in New York, Jason Jenkins down in Springfield. I had Chris Blankenhorn from Springfield on the show as well. Asher Platts, the Punk Patriot, up in Maine. George Martin up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So as you can tell, you know, it's not just Chicago-centric people. I'm talking to people in the state of Illinois. I'm talking to people in the Midwest, the New England states. I'm listening, you know, I'm talking to people everywhere. I'm tapping into this network to have these conversations with people. So this is, like I said, this is what this show's about. You know, it's all about having conversations. It's all about learning different perspectives on things. There's still some unsettling issues I've had with the activists community and community organizing community in politics, in political philosophy. You know, I'm still learning. You know, I've taken graduate courses in political philosophy, sociology, and cultural studies. I've taught those courses as well. I've written articles with the Independent Voter Network, Dissident Voices, Red Star Magazine, the Red Pepper in the UK, a whole host of news outlets and magazines I've written for when it comes to political commentary. And I'm still learning. I am still learning. You know, I'm still learning about all these issues because we do not stop at the education level that we have achieved towards. It doesn't stop at your high school diploma or your associate's, your bachelor's, your master's, your PhD. You just keep learning because education is vitally important. And I'm having big people in my studio scooting around like mice, which is kind of interesting. So, yep, we're just waiting for Morgan Fox, Director of Communications, with the marijuana policy project, and the transmitter is live. So, hey, Chicago. How are you guys doing? You're listening Out Front with AJ, AM 1710, Q4 Radio. So, hopefully when this show's archive, you can listen to the first half of the show and listen to my backstory of how I got here and everything. The one thing I did not mention on how I got here, I mean, I told you my little background on my own journalistic journey that I've had, you know, as being a writer, then being on radio, and then doing interviews and everything. How I got to be in this station was a conversation I had with Jason Page, who's one of our tech people here at Multiculti. And I've seen the studio, and I saw it was kind of bare and everything. And, you know, I kind of asked him, like, you know, what's going on there? I mean, can I just go in there and just podcast and all that? And he goes, well, I'll do one better. Talk to Bill Turk. I'm like, okay. Is it the same Bill Turk who I think it is? And he goes, one the same. And when I say that, Bill Turk and I have actually known each other through Dr. Laura, who also has a show here on AM 1710 Q4 Radio, because we were talking about on fracking as activists and everything, and we're talking about, you know, people who should be on board on fracking are brewers on fracking, the privatization of water and how, you know, the quality of water you need in order to make your beer and everything. And then we kind of realized that we are one of the same people via email because we haven't seen each other in person. Bill may have seen me in person, but I may not have recognized him in the street than I should have. And then, of course, he's like, yeah, I'll have you on the air. And I'm figuring it's going to be one day a week for an hour, which would have been fine. How about Monday through Friday from this two-hour block? And, you know, it's kind of like one of those deer-in-the-headlights moments, like, what? 2 hours of me talking? He goes, yeah, here I am, my third week on this program. So this is the real deal, people. This is maybe a community radio station, but we are live on the AM side of your radio dial. We are live on the internet worldwide, and we are small, but we are mighty in everything. And I'll see you two later. And I'm saying this, Bill and Raul, who's leaving me in the studio. Anarchy will happen right now. So this is what I do. You know, out front is about being out front of the issues, being out front with the politics, the activism, and the arts that are going on out there, because a lot of people in the mainstream media do nothing but be apologetic to the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the think tanks, and those who lean towards certain and not-for-profit industrial complex people. That's what the mainstream media does. They are all about their people. They're not about the people who have real feet to the ground, actually moving forward. We are the ones who have feet on the ground. We have a network of activists and community organizers that we know through this radio station, and we're going to bring our own people into the station. You know, we're going to have conversations with people who are doing the work, like Tom Trusher, the founder of Civic Lab, who fights the good fight when it comes to TIF district here in Cook County. We're going to be talking to people like Andy Thayer, who's been the forefront on the LGBTIQ front and direct action when it comes to anti-war. Joe Scarry, who's been on the forefront with civil liberties, and especially with drones, you know, having no drones at all. And then we're also talking to our own independent media people like Chris Giovannis, Mike Collis here, who's also here at Multiculti, who's with Chicago Indie Media Center. You know, Dresden Media Skeptic with Chicago Media Action. We're going to be talking to a whole slew of people, and I said we're talking to artists. We're talking to artists who are in galleries, who are doing their own work, who are teaching classes that you probably don't see in, like, the mainstream art scene. These are the people who are at Defibrillator, who perform at Chopin Theater, who perform in colleges and black box theaters, and they're in the small galleries. You know, we're going to be talking to those people, you know. Yeah, we're going to talk to international artists like our very own Sid Yiddish and the Candy Store Henchmen. You know, we're going to talk with people like that who are known internationally. But we're also going to be talking with people like Sarah Beth Woods, who will be on this show this Thursday to talk about the art that she does. And we're going to specifically talking about punk feminism and what that all entails with that. So that's what we're going to be talking about, is those things. People who have their feet to the ground, they're fighting the good fight, they are exposing themselves in politics, in activism, and in the arts, because this is what we do. We're very passionate of what we do. Yeah, I mean, I have had several jobs, but as some of my friends and family would tell you, I've always come back to some sort of volunteer efforts when it comes to civic and social engagement. That's where my heart lies in. And I've been influenced by a lot of people who have done those kinds of things. Abby Hoffman's for one. Fred Hampton's another. Mario Savano is one. from the Black Panthers to the Chicano movement to the second wave feminist movement to environmentalists to radical union labor to certain anarchists and socialists and communists to certain progressives, they have all been influenced. I've been influenced by these people. And why? Why am I attracted to them? Because they are want to know more about what's going on instead of the whole run-of-the-mill, this is what we need to do. They know they can do something bigger and better. They know they can fight stronger than what's going on right now. An example of that is something I talked about last week, is the Fight for 15 campaign. I think 15 is a great number. I think $15 for a minimum wage is awesome. But $15 an hour is not what we need economically. Economically, we need $21 an hour in order to meet the economic curve that we're at. So if we just have $15 an hour, you're making less at or maybe just under $30,000 a year. $21 an hour, you are making at or just a little below $40,000 a year. With the current economic system we have, you can't live off. You can, but it would be hard to live off $30,000 a year, especially if you have a family of two. There are certain expenses out there when it comes to a house mortgage, when it comes to maybe rent, gas, or paying mass transit costs, and you want to feed your children, clothe your family, provide the shelter, and then just do the things you want to do, you know? You can't do that with $30,000. You can do it with $40,000. You still have to budget $40,000 on that. You know, you're not living rich, you know, by any stretch of the means, but $40,000, you have flexibility of having decent budgeting that way than you can at $30,000, in my opinion. And I talked to Chris Blankenhorn about this on the air, and, you know, he said, you know, even though, and I'm just paraphrasing, and I'm not putting words in his mouth, 15 is moving the political football a little bit forward. 21 should not be the end game, and I'm not saying $21 ought to be the end game. 21, you should keep fighting for more and more and more once you get to 21. You know, because let's say you get 21, but, you know, you may have certain legislators like, oh, we're going to step back a little bit. You have 21, but let's take it back a little bit just to meet budgeting things. Because the other claim is if we have 21, then you're putting small businesses out because of the overhead and all that fun stuff. Then invest into small businesses. Stop investing into the private sector. Start investing into Main Street. Start putting more money into small business association and provide and increase loans for existing and creating new small businesses. That's what we also need. We also need people to listen to people in the cooperative movement about worker cooperatives, because those work too. We need a cooperative union model as well, instead of the current union model that we have at this moment. We just need a better, I just feel we just need a better system. We need a better structure than we have right now. Because if we keep going this way, ladies and gentlemen, then I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know what's going to happen. I don't have all the answers. But what I do know is we have to do something. And with the current elected officials that we have now, I don't know if they're really for us whatsoever. I think they are for the lobbyists. They are for corporate America. I do believe that they are not fighting with us. They're fighting against us. I know it's predominant here in Illinois when You had state representatives and state senators fighting for a regulatory bill when it comes to fracking instead of a moratorium on fracking. And there were even people who were not elected officials. You had organizers who said we need a regulatory bill because that is being politically smart. That may be political smart, but you are still advancing a pro-business bill, which we don't need when it comes to fracking. If you actually done your homework when it comes to fracking, then you would have been on board with a moratorium. So we have all these issues. There's not a day that goes by when I check my email or check my Facebook or I'm talking with people. There's something new every day, you know, in different fronts. I hear it from people. And, you know, we just got to keep fighting, you know. We just got to keep fighting. And we just have to remember that those of us in activism and community organizing, we sometimes have to take a step back, look at the greater picture, see what holes are being not filled and fill in those voids. And then at the end of the day, and you can also do it in the morning, but at the end of the day, create a space in your place, at your home or your apartment, wherever your space is at. Take a moment of your time. It could be your living room. It could be a bedroom. It could be a spare room. It could be your basement. It could, whatever it is, create a space for yourself. And start reflecting on the day. Reflect on what you have done that was good. Reflect on what you could have accomplished of the day. And then what are you going to accomplish tomorrow? And just take a deep breath. Reflect on that. Hopefully there's no distraction noise around you. It's just you in silence, taking deep breaths, reflecting in deep thought. Think about how you are trying to strive to become a better activist and community organizer. That's what you need to do also. We do not take time for ourselves to make me time. It's always about other people's time. It's me time. I've seen a lot of people get burned out in activism and community organizing because they do not take in self-reflection. They do not meditate. Because if you don't do that, then you're not helping yourself. You're going to be burned out. And I will be personal about this. A year ago, I was in the same situation. It was around this time. And I was kind of burned out. There was some other underlying issues as well that were more personal in my life, which I'm be more than happy to share with anybody about that. And because of that, you know, I was just mentally drained. I was distracted. I couldn't think straight. I had to kind of go by moment by moment in order to get through the day. But then there was times where I just want to lay in bed all day or just sit on my recliner and just reflect on things and all that. So take me time. And what have you. So I'm going to take a quick break, and we will talk with Morgan Fox with the Marijuana Policy Project. And I'm going to play one of my favorite songs by a band that some... Wow. I'm going to be playing a song from a band that I like, to a degree, but some people may not like them, but this kind of describes the kind of person I like. So this is Good Charlotte.
social distortion. My girl's a hot girl, a hood rider needs an attitude adjustment. Christina, what I want to meet her. She ain't too pretty, so you better up and cover. My girl, a hot girl, a white girl, and she's angry at the world. Emergency, call 911. She's pissed off at everyone. Police, rescue, FBI. She wants a riot, she wants a riot. And everywhere we go, she gets us thrown out constantly. But that's okay, cause I know my baby will do anything for me.
Yeah,
Christina, wouldn't wanna meet her. She hates you, Britney, so you better up a cover. My girl's a hot girl, a riot girl, and she's thinking on the word I said. Emergency, call 911. She's pissed off at everyone. Police, rescue, FBI. She wants a riot, she wants a riot.
And we are back here on AM 1710 Q4 Radio. Yeah, you just heard Good Charlotte. Riot Girl, kind of described the kind of person I tend to lean towards. So, ladies, I'm here. Just saying. Anywho, we have now Morgan Fox, the Director of Communication with the Marijuana Policy Project. Is that your official title, Morgan?
Communications Manager, but close enough.
Okay. So like I said, Morgan's with the Marijuana Policy Project. And Morgan, for our listeners, can you describe what the MPP is about and, you know, what goals it strives towards?
Well, we're the nation's largest marijuana policy reform nonprofit out of Washington, D.C., and we concentrate primarily on state and federal lobbying and running ballot initiatives in order to make marijuana legal and tax regulated like alcohol so that we can end the harms caused by marijuana prohibition.
So is your organization one of the lobbying groups that pushes for legalization of marijuana or medical marijuana throughout the country?
Yes, we do.
And can you talk a little bit about your activism and community organizing with those efforts, please?
Well, with state lawmakers and grassroots organizers across the country and trying to educate lawmakers and the general public about the harms associated with marijuana prohibition and about the fact that marijuana is safer than alcohol and has a variety of medical benefits, and yet we continue to arrest 750,000 people a year for it. And, you know, that's just not a system that we can continue funding and, taking resources away from law enforcement and ruining people's lives over that we can allow to continue in our societies. But we work specifically in various states to try to change state law with the ultimate goal of making marijuana taxed and regulated similarly to alcohol.
So what's this,
for adults.
So, yes. Yeah, so let's jump right into that, the economics of marijuana. If the entire United States legalized marijuana medically and just outright legalized it, what is the economic benefit to that? How does that fit into the current economic system that we have currently in the United States?
Well, estimates are, and it's a conservative, the marijuana industry in commodity in the United States, including the illicit market, is somewhere around $30 billion. Some people think that's a really, really conservative estimate, that it could be much, much higher. But in terms of the benefits and revenue generated from this, one of the more conservative estimates would be somewhere around $17 billion just because of $8.7 billion in law enforcement savings from enforcing marijuana provision, over $8 billion just in tax revenue generated, not to mention the jobs that would be created, the various innovation in ancillary industries, the sort of thing that we're starting to see already in places like Colorado and Washington, where the industry is really booming, and all aspects of it that are tangentially connected to it.
So help me out here. If someone says marijuana or cannabis or hemp, are they all talking about the exact same thing, or is each one a separate species of plant, if you will, or do each one of them have a different purpose when it comes to using them?
Well, cannabis is actually a plant genus. Hemp and what people commonly refer to as marijuana are both members of the cannabis family. Marijuana is actually was invented during the early days of Prohibition to negatively associate cannabis with Mexican immigrants. And so it's basically like just a slang term for cannabis. Now, what people think of in terms of, the recreational product or the product that adults use is, marijuana is just, a term for that. They're talking about cannabis sativa or cannabis indica. And hemp is actually just a cousin of that plant, which has very low amounts of THC and the other cannabinoids very active in what's commonly referred to as marijuana.
So what is your own analysis of legalized marijuana? And what I'm asking that is, I've been to Europe a few times. I've been to Amsterdam, one of the cities that legalizes marijuana. So I've been to the coffee shops, and I've been also places in Europe where it's acceptable in certain cities and everything. But I feel there's a total different mentality in Europe versus here in the United States. And I was wondering, is there a different mentality that you know of, or what the MPP's research has done? Because I feel if we don't have that same mentality that cities like Amsterdam or Paris or London or even Rome, that we cannot advance any legislation when it comes to marijuana.
Well, I think we've seen for the first time but we've seen the highest level of support for making marijuana legal in the United States just recently, when a Gallup poll came out showing that 58% of Americans want marijuana to be legal and treated similar to alcohol. That's a 10-point jump from just the year previous. So I think that people are really coming around to the idea that this is a relatively safe and non-toxic substance. And if we're not going to arrest people for using alcohol, we certainly shouldn't arrest adults for using marijuana responsibly. I think that there are cultural differences between here and and Europe that are going to really affect how a legal marijuana framework is put into place. For instance, as soon as stores are open in Colorado and Washington to legally cultivate and have retail sales for marijuana for adults, Colorado and Washington will be the most legal and tolerant places for marijuana use in the world, far more than in the Netherlands or elsewhere in Europe. Use is tolerated but still illegal. And for instance, in Amsterdam, the coffee shops, it's legal for them to, or tolerated for them to sell 5 grams at a time to consumers, but they have to continue to buy their product on the illicit market. The frames of laws that we're starting to set up and we're starting to see passed in the United States are much more regulated and much more controlled than the sort of nod and a wink approach that Europe has taken.
You said 58% of Americans are in favor of legalizing marijuana, but what's that 58% break down to? I mean, do you have the demographics that breaks down that 58%?
Well, this is a Gallup poll run every year with a random section of the population. And, Gallup definitely has one of the best track records for polling accuracy.
Well, I understand that. I guess one could contend that, okay, there's 58%, but certain college students want to see marijuana pass because they want to use it for recreational purposes. You may have an older generation who wants to use it because they do realize that marijuana is one of the more better alternative uses for healthcare. So that's what I'm kind of interested of this demographic breakdown, because I think that is a little bit more telling of what that 58% number should be, or what it is.
I don't think that we can look at a specific demographic and just assume that they all have the exact same motivation for wanting marijuana to be legal. What we can glean from this, though, is that if you look at the general population, more people want it legal for whatever reason than not. And that's really important, because that means that the laws that currently have in place in 48 states out of 50 are not publicly supported. Those break down differently in individual states. But if we look at it nationally, it is really spread on this issue. And we're going to see more and more states starting to join Colorado and Washington as the years go by. Just recently, we saw 10 different states propose, I'm sorry, 15 different states actually propose making marijuana legal, but not in Colorado or Washington has done to a certain extent. And that number is only going to increase. I think that we could see another 10 states make marijuana legal in by 2017, at which point the federal government is going to have to address this issue, and Congress is going to have to look at whether or not federal marijuana prohibition is continue.
Can you tell us about your networking relationships with other organizations that fight the good fight when it comes to legalizing marijuana or cannabis? What's your relationship with any of the normal states? Not all the states are abnormal, but the normal states, like Illinois Normal, Indiana Normal, like that. Or I believe there's like cannabis or Coloradans for cannabis, things like that. I mean, what's your relationship with those activist groups and community organizers?
Well, we definitely work with local and grassroots groups whenever we're trying to pass any state or local ordinance. You know, we generally tend to let people that in order to help the legislature to get a ballot initiative passed. You know, we just provide expertise and manpower. For national groups, though, we have a great working relationship with all of Normal, the Alliance, American for Safe Access, Students for Sensible Drug Policy. We all have areas in which we excel, and we try to cooperate on larger issues whenever possible.
Could you tell us maybe what the what have been the challenges when working with activism groups and community organizers? This is an unfiltered show. You know, we're pretty blunt and open, because all of us activists and community organizers need to understand the lessons and learn from those lessons in order to bridge networking and how to grow activism and community organizing. So, I mean, could you explain, maybe challenges and what people can learn from those challenges?
Well, I think the biggest challenge, and this applies to, national advocates and activists as well as to local grassroots groups, is that people tend to have a tendency to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Politics is the art of the possible, meaning that compromise is going to be necessary across the board. And I think a lot of times people are unwilling to compromise on certain issues, and that results in, not being able to, work together as smoothly, or just flat out not being able to convince lawmakers that, pass a bill with, a certain point was uncompromisable. And that can be a serious problem. That being said, I think that people are really learning from that and learning that, we don't have to pass a perfect law. We can just pick the good law and then build upon it.
And let's talk about that.
That was a lesson that was very difficult for me to learn personally.
So let's talk about that just for a brief moment. So in Illinois, outside of, legalizing medical marijuana, one of the other bills that was being put forth was fracking. There was a moratorium on fracking and a regulatory bill on fracking. There was a lot of people and a lot of other certain activists and community organizers were pushing for a regulatory bill because they thought that would advance the political football forward, whereas a moratorium would be the incorrect tactic and approach to go. But at the end of the day, the regulatory bill on fracking is no more than a pro-business bill that still allows people to come in to Southern Illinois and start fracking, start going to Ottawa and, demolishing state parks and everything. So I guess, can you talk about those challenges about compromise and all that? Because that is one of the key issues that activists and community organizers have a hard time dealing with, because what is the difference between being politically smart and standing on your ideals?
I had a problem with this in New Hampshire. You know, we've been very closely with lawmakers to some medical marijuana bill this past year, and we're finally successful. Unfortunately, government decided that you would just any sort of home cultivation for patients. Now, we could have decided to make that a sticking point and say, like, you know, we're absolutely going to, we have to get this law passed with it, and we can't pass anything. But that would have been just for the delaying getting a medical marijuana law passed. So, you know, unfortunately, in order to get the thing on the books, we had to agree with scrapping home cultivation. And now we're in the process of fighting to have it added again to the law. Patients in New Hampshire won't be able to have any safe and legal source for their medicine yet until the dispensaries are open. But that doesn't mean we're not going to be continuously trying to make it, the law better and more effective and safer.
I was talking to my friend and community organizer, Chris Blankenhorn, down in Springfield, Illinois. And we were having a conversation about minimum wage. There's a current fighting for 15 minimum wage. And I'm of the side of the argument that we don't need 15, we need 21, because that meets our current economic needs, whereas 15 only just gets you to maybe at par to meet our needs economically. But he was of the opinion that 21 is just the end game. So, and I'm saying this because what about the things that you're talking about where people are looking more towards an end game and striving towards, you know, meeting the actual needs that we have and then moving forward?
Well, I mean, I think that there are definitely some analogies to be drawn there between the two. You know, even with a moderately good law, we can still add on to that and make it better. You know, laws are constantly going to be evolving, and thinking about things in terms of an end game sometimes is really counterproductive. You're not going to overturn 70-plus years of marijuana prohibition overnight. You know, there's going to be some incrementalism necessary in order to make that happen. And by not really recognizing that, I think a lot of time.
Also, tell us about how can one do political research in order to advance legislation like legalized marijuana or medical marijuana. How can one be in the game but try to understand the political game as well? What can they do in order to become better political researchers, or when they want to be on a campaign, issue campaign, that is?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing to do is to educate yourself and other the major issues at play in the larger issue of marijuana prohibition and on the reasons why marijuana prohibition should end. And once you have the arguments down, then it becomes a lot easier to convey those arguments not only to your friends and family, but particularly to your lawmakers. And if you did a little bit of research about their voting history, call them up, ask them about their position on certain bills, things like that, you can really sort of learn exactly where you need to apply political pressure.
What about dialogue? How much is dialogue important when fighting issues when you're on a campaign?
That's absolutely important. I mean, not only good internal dialogue with your allies and coalition partners, but you have to be open to with those you, and you certainly have to start dialogues with members of the voting public and with lawmakers. That's one thing. And I think that we found that when the more dialogue you have and the more people talk about this issue, the more they come around to realizing that marijuana prohibition is a failure. And, you know, at some point, because it's an expensive and dangerous policy.
But what is the difference between dialogue and saying the talking points?
Well, dialogue indicates that there's a back and forth, so you have to be willing to listen to what you're talking to is actually saying.
Okay, so let me frame that question a little bit better. This has been my experience that when you have issue-based campaigners out in the street, they do a lot more. They feel dialogue is nothing more than just saying the talking points while you're on the street, rather other people feel that a dialogue is you're actually sitting down with people at a diner, a bar, a coffee house, a library, and having a full conversation about the issue as well as other things to get to pretty much be interpersonal with people rather than these are my talking points, give me your information, and so we can put you in our database. I mean, that's what I'm pretty much talking about. How does one try to provide dialogue without looking robotic, if it were, as it were?
Well, there's a lot of ways to do that through various town hall, personal meetings. But really, for the average activist, just starting a conversation with somebody, with your neighbor, with your teacher, with your fellow employees, things like that. But you know, a good canvasser should be able to start a conversation as opposed to just rattling off talking points. You know, that's one of the things that separates good canvassers from mediocre ones, is that a good canvasser doesn't make you feel like you're getting talked at.
And on the topic of campaigning, in your view, what makes a good issue campaign? What would be, if you were a campaign manager for an issue, what would be the ideal situation in terms of, you know, recruiting staff and getting your message out there?
To tell you the truth, I haven't done too much on-the-ground stuff in the last few years, so I think that, you know, the situation has changed enough that I might not be an incredible expert on a particular subject.
Well, I mean, just tell us what your previous experience was, because I'm sure a lot hasn't changed over the years. I mean, I've been in and out of the game myself on issues, but tell us what happened previously and, you know, what you learned from your previous experience.
You know, having good staff is obviously very important, particularly staff that actually cares about the issue and are just, you know, using it for a job. Having good relations with the local media is excellent to be able to get your message out and to make sure that people see you and your side of the issue as much as they see the opposition. And that in particular is very necessary, and it doesn't really cost a lot of money either. You can, you know, just, once you find out who's covering the issue, just talk to those reporters all the time, develop a personal relationship with them. Excuse me. And I think that that's really one of the best things that you can do if you're running any campaign. You know, exposure is everything.
Morgan, give us your own analysis of – you've kind of touched on it here and there, but give us your analysis of the political landscape of legalizing marijuana as well as medical marijuana across the United States. Are we going to see elected officials in D.C. on the House and Senate side to put forth bills and actually pass it through with no issue? Or do you feel that there's going to be this overturn of a whole different ideological landscape that's going to be before us?
Well, there's a growing block of people in Congress that are supportive of such bills, and there are several bills relating to marijuana prohibition and medical marijuana and banking, things like that. On the docket right now. Unfortunately, we don't have as much support as we need at the federal level. Politicians have been far behind public opinion on this issue for years, and nowhere is that more true than at the federal level. So we've been getting much more traction at the state level. And my prediction is that, you know, given the fact that these laws are starting to change at a quicker and quicker pace, we saw so many states last year considering some sort of change to their marijuana policy, whether it be medical decriminalization or full-out legalization. Over the course of the next few legislative sessions, we're going to see that same sort of thing. So my prediction is that we're going to marijuana be made legal for adults 21 and, cultivation and retail sales regulated in 10 more states by 2017, at which point Congress will be forced to address the issue just because of the sheer number of states that have started implementing these systems. So then we'll probably see a change in federal law around 2019.
And what about at the state level? I mean, what states do you see that are coming on the rise of legalizing, decriminalizing marijuana, passing medical marijuana laws? What is in the docket, as it were, if it were, for those to be passed?
There's far too many states to name, but I think that the ones that are going to be running active ballot initiatives next year are going to be Alaska, California, and Oregon, and possibly a couple others. And Alaska stands, I think, a chance of winning, but Oregon should be a close next. California, it's a question of a
So before I let you go, I have one question for you. One of the blocking regions that I've always found when it comes to issues like marijuana is the Deep South. Has there been any breakthrough in the Deep South? And when I say the Deep South, I'm going from South Carolina all the way over to Texas, okay? Has there been any advances in those states to say, okay, we understand where you're coming from, and we'll listen, and we might think about it? Has there been any advances in that region?
Well, we're starting to see a lot of sentencing reform issues come up in states like Louisiana and Alabama, who have some of the harsher penalties. And there are a growing number of grassroots activists and supportive legislatures in several of those states. But, you know, states like Georgia, Mississippi, Oklahoma, are not seeing too much traction at all. Florida seems to be the one that's making the most progress, with it becoming a very, very big issue, particularly because of the large elder population that can take advantage of medical marijuana. But, you know, like, as with alcohol prohibition, even after the end of federal prohibition, many states continue to enforce their state laws against alcohol use and cultivation. So I think that, you know, it's totally possible that even with a change in federal law, that there will be some that resist this change. And, you know, residents, as long as their lawmakers aren't standing in the way of the will of the people. But I think that we're going to start seeing more and more change in this issue just across the nation, including in the Deep South. And it's only a matter of time before we start seeing that translate into changes in law.
Wow. Morgan, thank you for coming on the air. I know you're a busy person. I know you have a lot of things you are probably on your plate, but I want to thank you for taking at least this much time out to talking with us here and Out Front. And, you know, hopefully you and your colleagues can come on the show anytime you want. Just let us know.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
So thank you, and we will talk soon, all right?
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. That was Morgan Fox, the communications director with the Marijuana Policy Project out there in Washington, D.C. You can check them out at www.mpp.org. I know Nick's in the hallway because I kind of see him.
What's going on, AJ?
Nick's a little – are you hungover, dude?
No. No, I'm not hungover. Tired. Very tired. I moved this weekend.
Oh, my Lord. Where did you move to, my friend?
Ended up going to moving up to Bensenville.
Oh, that's right. How'd that work out for you? Tell me you moved yesterday.
No, I ended up moving. Though I did move to one of the spots that, for the first time in my life, I got a severe warning text message on my cell phone.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, if...
I'm glad you got yours. I didn't get one.
Well, apparently, if you're in a region that they're assessing for severe danger, there's a new policy where they can just forward messages to everything connected to every cell tower.
Who's your phone company?
I have AT&T right now.
See, U.S. Cellular does not like me then, because I don't get that kind of text whatsoever.
Well, it was funny, because I'm sitting there watching the Bears game with my friend.
I'm sorry?
Well, I...
They won the Bears game.
And the Bears did well, though. It was a good game, but it was just, it was a 2 hour. Not a football fan?
Not Bears.
Oh, yeah, well.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. You're a Packer fan. You're that guy.
That's right. And we're live on AM 7. We're live on the AM side, so all you Chicago people, yes, there is a Packer fan here in the house, so you can send your hate mail directly to me if you want to. That's fine.
You know, you joke about that, but now you're going to start getting those crazy
people. I know, right? I'm going to be like that guy who catches that ball at the Cubs game.
Oh, God. We should not even say his name. The disrespect has been done to that guy. Did you
see the documentary about that?
Well, there's two of them. Yeah, there's two of them. There's the Catching Hell, which is the one I think you're talking about, the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
Those shows are fantastic, by the way. If you're a sports fan and you get the chance, you're sitting at home. I think they're usually on Tuesdays or something like that.
I have Netflix. I mean, I've been watching all of them on Netflix.
But they also air live on Tuesdays. Yeah, and they are fantastic.
I gotta catch up on some newer ones.
You're a hockey fan, right?
Yeah.
They did a great one about a guy named... well, he bought the New York Islanders, and he only had $600,000 to his name. But he managed to buy them for $173 million by forging two pieces of paper and convincing people that he had all this money. He was in control of the team for 4 months until the payments finally came due. And
I wish I heard that before.
Yeah, it's a great story. It's fantastic. The guy is a criminal genius. My dad always points out that people like this should just be working for the FBI.
Well, probably. I mean, they should. No, those documentaries are great. I saw that one. Was it 30 on 30? No, it wasn't. No, it was. It was about the Serbian basketball team and the Croatian basketball team.
Once Brothers with Vladi Divac.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a fantastic one, too.
I remember.
That one's heartbreaking.
It was. And I remember growing up and, you know, like, you had Tony Kukoc for the Bulls, Vladi Divac, you know, right, at the Lakers at the time. I forgot if he got traded.
No, at that point, he wasn't with the Lakers anymore at that point. But it was just, for those of you who don't know, it's a story all about Vlad Divac and a player, I cannot remember the player's name at the top of my head.
I thought Kukoc was one of them.
No, but Kukoc was on the same team. They were all on the Yugoslavian team, and then when Yugoslavia broke up during the fall of the Soviet Union, that's when you started getting the fighting between the Croatians and the Serbians, and that's when Vlade Divac and his former teammate, started to, I want to say he was Serbian, and they started going back and forth and becoming really aggressive, and it was a whole deal. But this documentary is all about him reconnecting with his family 15 years after all that kind of stuff has ended. But it's one of those documentaries, you get halfway through it, and it just wrecks you at the end.
My favorite ESPN 30 on 30 is about the Fab Five.
Okay, I like that one. Have you seen the Bo Jackson one yet?
Yes. I didn't know that many rumors about him.
Well, my favorite thing about that is when they do the Tecmo Bowl. Like, they use Tecmo Bowl as an example as to why Bo Jackson is phenomenal. That documentary is fantastic. And I love, one of my favorite things I've ever seen done in a documentary is done at the end of that, which is they show you, if you've seen it, but at the end of it, Bo Jackson essentially talks about what he's up to in his life now. And he's like, you know, sometimes I watch football, sometimes I go out and do stuff, but when I want to relax, I come down to my basement and I make arrows. And he's just got this room full of arrows. And then they show you, he goes outside with his bow and arrow and he cues up an arrow. And he fires one shot, and it goes right in the neck of a fake Darius guy that's like 100 yards away.
His neighbor's lawn, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Well, no, what he says is he could hit it from the other side of his neighbor's lawn.
And he lives in Chicago.
And he lives out by Medina Golf Course.
Where?
He's not in the city. He's over by Medina Golf Course out in
the south suburbs.
Yeah, southwest suburbs, like far southwest.
Like Homewood?
Yeah, something like way out there. But the part that's really cool visually is they show you him queuing up the second arrow. And whoever made the documentary made this brilliant decision to, as he cues the arrow back and stares at his target, they intercut it with a shot slowly fading over of him at the plate for the Royals when he hits a home run. And it's like the exact same eye line and everything, like the same level of focus coming out of this very exceptional athlete. I mean, the stories they tell you about at the beginning where he just, from a standing position, jumped over a Volkswagen. Like, no one does that. No one can do that, but there goes Bo Jackson. Just, I'm going to do that. And the thing when he runs on the wall.
Well, and that's what my whole thing is with the athletes. I mean, once you're an athlete, you kind of apply your athleticism to other things. You know, that whole thing you just mentioned, this visualization of, he was with the Royals.
Right.
Him eye lining up and the way he was, like, kind of coiling back with the bat is the same kind of position he has with his bow. He feels comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes can apply their talents to other things and all that. I'm a firm believer of that.
You mentioned athletes. It's funny because on my show today, I'm going to mention the fact that Donovan McNabb's in some trouble because he basically said that NASCAR drivers aren't athletes. Now, I'm not a NASCAR fan. I don't enjoy watching NASCAR. And while I do think it is not the most athletic of sports, you do have to have a remarkable conditioning and an ability to maintain focus. Mm-hmm. To do it and to maintain a hand-eye coordination. It's a really fun debate as to what makes you an athlete or not. Like, Tiger Woods, to me, is an athlete. John Daly is not. I don't know if you know golf at all, but John Daly's a fatter golfer. He smokes. He drinks as he walks on the course.
Right.
He's the everyman on a golf course. Do you consider him athletic? And based on appearance, you almost don't have to, but he does the exact same thing as Tiger Woods, who a majority of the world would consider a great athlete. It's strange. Right? Do you think of Dale?
See, this is now where my former coaching experience comes into play, and because I'm also a certified high performance coach for athletes. You know, athleticism is athleticism. You know, I mean, someone my size, you know, I may not look like someone who could run a mile, which I can't, but I do have an agility like a cat. You know, I mean, there's certain things I can pick up really quickly and everything. So athleticism has to do more about muscle memory and how to use the mechanics of your body to do things. So the way, like, John Daly drives the ball is all about mechanics and everything. You can be a huge person.
Right.
But you can drive that ball by using the anatomy and the physiology of your body in order to perform well.
My example with the NASCAR thing, though, I don't want to give too much, but essentially, right. if you look at it as, when you think of Richard Petty,
yeah.
do you think Richard Petty was a great athlete? No, you think Richard Petty was a great driver.
Right.
In today's world, if you go, is Jimmy Johnson a great athlete? People will go, he could be. Is Jeff Gordon a great athlete? Well, I mean, they're in top physical shape. They maintain their body and they do stuff. Dale Earnhardt drank every day after the race. So right. it's an interesting discussion.
Tell us what's going to be on your show.
We're going to do that. We're going to talk all things Walking Dead because I just finished watching that episode today. I'm going to talk.
You finished an episode of Walking Dead?
Yeah, that's what I was doing here while I was getting ready for the show. Oh, okay. Hey, I have to
I
do these things.
I haven't seen it yet, so that's why I'm like, you've seen it?
Of course.
I'm like the last person I've seen it.
And then what was the other big show? Oh, there's a bunch of stuff with the Marvel movies, so we're going to talk about that.
Well, I'm going to listen to that part of it, so I'm actually intrigued on your take about that. So this has been Out Front with AJ. AM 1710 Q4 Radio. If you're listening to us, you're listening to us live on the AM side of your radio. You're also listening to us on www.QUE4.org, as well as on your phone, your smartphone or iPhone, by downloading the Winamp. So we're here Monday through Friday on Out Front, 1 to 3. You're now going to be listening to Nick. So talk to you guys tomorrow.